The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So tonight I'd like to continue exploring a theme, the theme of mindfulness. I started this 3 weeks ago or so. I was away for a couple of weeks teaching a retreat. But I'd like to explore a little in a little bit more kind of the Buddha's instructions to us on how to cultivate mindfulness. But I'll start with just a little bit of an overview about what mindfulness is and how it functions for us, why it's helpful. So mindfulness, we could just in general terms, I think, speak of it as being a being present, being aware, some words that kind of evoke the quality of mindfulness, being here, being aware of what's happening in the present moment while it's happening. These are some basic kind of definitions, a sense of witnessing experience, perhaps. These kinds of words. Connected to this quality of being mindful. The word mindfulness itself, to me, actually, is not terribly evocative of the experience. It's got a kind of a clinical sound or something. Awareness, for me, more has a sense of the quality, that we are aware. We kind of have a resonance with that, the meaning of that word, more than we have perhaps with mindfulness until we start to practice mindfulness. But the Pali word that's translated as mindfulness, and somebody just decided to translate it as mindfulness a long time ago, which is why we call it mindfulness. The Pali word, the root of the Pali word, which is sati, means something like to remember. And one translator says that what do we remember when we're mindful? We remember the present moment. And another teacher, one of my own teachers, says we remember ourselves when we're mindful. And so this kind of sense that I was speaking about in the guided meditation, breathing in, just knowing that you're here, sitting and knowing that you're here, just being aware of yourself in the present moment. I think this quality of mindfulness, to me, in terms of a supportive quality for helping us, it's based in an ordinary quality of our minds, a kind of an everyday quality of our human experience, that this capacity to know that we know, this capacity to be self-reflective, essentially, to know what's happening for us while it's happening. And yet, that is not quite enough for this mindfulness to be supportive for our spiritual growth and development. Because we might be aware of what's happening in the present moment, but not so much be curious about it as something happening in the present moment. And so this is one way to look at what this quality of mindfulness that is supportive for us in our meditation practice, in our mindfulness practice, to begin to be curious about our experience as it's happening in the present moment. This human experience. What is this human experience? Whatever's happening, what is the human experience of seeing or hearing? What's the human experience of anger, for instance? What is the experience like when we have reactivity arising? What is the experience like when we have kindness or love arising? This question is what is kind of a pointer to the quality of mindfulness that the Buddha called right mindfulness or wise mindfulness, or a mindfulness that is supportive for helping us to understand our own minds so that we can recognize how our minds kind of get caught and stuck in reactivity and begin to through understanding how our minds are caught and stuck in reactivity, begin to change our minds. This quality of mindfulness, this quality of right mindfulness, is a fundamental piece of how we can change our minds. Without this capacity, without this reflectiveness of looking at what's happening in our experience, what tends to happen in our lives is that we kind of go along the way we have been going along, because we are very deeply conditioned. We're conditioned by what our parents taught us, by what we've experienced in the past and how we responded and the kind of responses we got to that. We are conditioned by what we learned in school. We're conditioned by how people reacted to us on the playground. All kinds of conditions come into how we are in relationship to experience that happens. And I think we all know this in a way, you know, how our relationships with our friends and our partners as we come to be adults, they're very much shaped by our relationships from when we were a child. You know, that we see ourselves playing out certain patterns, maybe even patterns that our parents played out. We see ourselves duplicating them. And so this conditioning tends to unfold, tends to just tumble on, unless there's this capacity to kind of be curious. So this capacity to know what's happening in the present moment while it's happening, to recognize, oh, this is what's going on. Anger's arising right now. Frustration or impatience or confusion is arising right now. This capacity allows us, is a key piece to how we can reshape our conditioning. We are not at the mercy of our conditioning. It sometimes feels like we are. Sometimes it feels like it's very difficult to change habits. That's essentially what we're talking about here, is our minds are conditioned in habitual ways. One of the phrases that the Buddha used was, whatever one frequently ponders, that becomes the inclination of the mind. And if we, and what we frequently ponder is generally what we've been taught. How our parents shaped us, how our school shaped us. This is what tends to unfold. Unless we have some capacity for self-reflection to look at, oh, this is what's happening now. When we turn towards our experience in this way with mindfulness, so this is this function of mindfulness, to look at our human experience, something different can happen. And so just to point again to this quality, kind of the ordinary quality in our minds, the kind of the basic quality on which mindfulness is founded, this capacity to know what's happening while it's happening, we can ask probably anybody on the street if they're frustrated or angry and they're demonstrating that. We could probably ask them, do you know that you're angry? And they would look at us kind of like we were nuts, like, well, yeah, of course I know I'm angry. But the way that they're noticing that they're angry is generally not to be curious about, well, what is this experience of anger? It's more to know that they're angry in order to change something that's happening around them or to get back at somebody. And so the whole kind of way or orientation that capacity to know what's happening in the present moment is aimed is in a direction that tends to reinforce those patterns. That when we are, for instance, if we are angry and we tend to be putting our attention on what we are angry about, just think about that for a moment. If there's something that is happening in your life that creates frustration or confusion, and you focus on that, it tends to keep creating frustration and confusion. And so that tends to just reinforce the pattern. So we are looking at exploring being with our experience in a different way, this kind of turning towards, letting go for a time at least of what we are kind of reacting to in the world, and turning towards the experience of the human experience of what the reactivity is. This is a very different experience, very different approach. And certainly when I first learned about this, I didn't quite understand how it would help. But basically, you know, one of the main reasons why and how it helps is because when we're kind of focusing on what we're angry with, not aware of the anger itself, in and of itself, not aware of the experience of anger itself, then it's as if all of the patterns and habits that have shaped that reaction, that have shaped that reactivity, they're all kind of just churning along and shaping more of that reactivity. When we become mindful, one of the things I've kind of appreciated about it is that before I practiced mindfulness, before I learned about mindfulness, I was just assuming that the way to happiness was to follow through on my reactivity. That was the best I knew. You know, it's like, okay, well, I'm angry about this. The best way I know to deal with this is to make sure that that other person knows what they did wrong, or something like that. And yet what I began to appreciate as turning towards the mindfulness, turning towards the feeling with mindfulness, is that I began to see there's all kinds of stuff going on in there that has been habitually below what I might call the surface of what we might call the subconscious. You know, that much of what is motivating us, much of what is fueling our habits, our patterns, it's kind of going on below our conscious awareness. And what mindfulness begins to do is allows us to kind of see into that. There is not, in my experience, a hard line of the subconscious. That as we start to be curious about experience as it's happening in the present moment, we begin to see kind of the things that are bubbling underneath that pattern. We start to see how it's been put together. We start to understand some of the beliefs and views that are shaping it. And sometimes as we start to see those beliefs and views that are shaping our reactions, we realize, wow, you know, I don't even consciously believe those things anymore. Sometimes this happens, not always. Sometimes we see those beliefs and views and we're like, yeah, I believe that one. That seems completely true. But there are times when we start to see that what's shaping us are old patterns, old habits that are no longer really relevant for us. And because we are seeing them, we begin to have some options, some opportunities to respond in a different way. So one thing I want to point to in this exploration of mindfulness, this turning towards our experience is human experience, turning away from what's happening out there and towards the human experience. This is a kind of a fundamental shift in our orientation that we kind of have to learn at first, that we tend to be so habitually oriented on what's happening outside of us that it's harder for us to touch into the experience here and now of what is this experience of anger? What is this experience of frustration or confusion or love or generosity or gratitude? So what is this experience? So this turning towards and letting go of what's happening out there may sound like we are stepping back from the world. But what I would say is that for a while, especially at the beginning, we may need to practice with exploring the experience of whatever's happening in the present moment to get familiar with it. But we are not, this practice of mindfulness is not about withdrawing from the world. It is not about denying that there are things happening in the world that are unjust and that need compassion and wisdom to make changes. And so this is a piece that I really like to emphasize, because the way we talk about mindfulness is turning towards our human experience. Sounds like we're turning away from the world. And it may be for times we do that. It may be at times we do turn inward so that we can begin to get familiar with this experience. But what happens as we practice is that we begin to be able to recognize what's happening in the world and what's happening in here at the same time. And so then we begin to, rather than be reactive through aversion, anger, hatred, rage, confusion, instead of reacting to what's happening in the world in those ways, this exploration begins to give us a little bit of space around those reactions to have a different kind of response, a response that might come from compassion or wisdom or generosity or kindness, rather than from anger or confusion or hatred. And so the practice of mindfulness is not about not acting in the world. It seems to, in my experience, it seems to create the conditions for us to be able to act more skillfully in the world. When we act out of aversion and anger and hatred, we are reinforcing those patterns not only in our own hearts and minds, but also in the world. Whatever we frequently ponder becomes the inclination of our minds, and not only our minds, but other people's minds. And so that reinforcement of acting out of anger and hatred tends to just perpetuate those cycles. And so we explore the possibility with mindfulness, as we can recognize, oh right, this is anger that's arising right now. That recognition seems to give us a little bit of space to know that we're angry and to potentially be able to act in a different way, to respond in a different way. And this turning towards the reactivity, turning towards the difficulty, begins to create the conditions. This is a completely different approach or a completely different response to that than frequently pondering it. It might seem the same. It's like when I first got that instruction or that heard that, when you are experiencing reactivity, know that you're experiencing reactivity. I thought, well, you know, how is that going to make any difference? Isn't that just going to make me more angry to know that I'm angry? But it's a different kind of knowing. It's not the same thing as frequently pondering the anger. It's stepped back just a little bit and is knowing the experience of it. So it's got a different quality to it. And we can, you know, when I first started doing this, when I first started practicing with it, it didn't actually take me that long to begin to understand. I mean, just hearing the instruction, it didn't make much sense. But as I began to try it and just to notice, oh, this is what it feels like to be angry. This is what it feels like to be frustrated or confused. This is what it's like to be a reactive human being. Not trying to stop it, but just trying to know it. This is really the middle way in a way that the Buddha pointed to. It is when there's something arising, when there's a reactivity arising in particular, not repressing it, which might be our tendency if we don't want to act on it. We might think we have to repress it in order not to act on it. But then there's the other side of expressing it. That might tend to be our usual response, that one of these two, that either I express it or repress it. And yet there's this middle way, and the Buddha talked about his path to as being this middle way between, you know, denying and expressing. And what this requires is a kind of an open-hearted willingness to know this human being is experiencing this reactive difficulty, and yet having a commitment to fully experiencing it and yet not acting on it. This is what mindfulness can do for those reactive emotions. It can allow us to hold them without repressing them and without expressing them. And when we repress those reactive emotions, they go underground, they go into our subconscious, and they tend to kind of churn themselves up again. As we express them, it tends to reinforce them, that's the way to function in the world. And so this middle way of neither repressing or expressing brings a whole different dynamic into our system, one that helps us to understand something new about these difficult emotions. And one of the key things we start to understand about them is that they don't feel very good in the present moment, those reactive emotions. And that's actually helpful to know, because we typically, when we are reacting, are not so aware that the reaction itself is painful. We are attributing the pain as to being something coming from something outside. And so this shift to mindfulness, it's a hugely different approach to our experience. And so the Buddha's instructions for us, he gave a teaching in one text. It's kind of a very famous text that describes a whole bunch of different ways to cultivate mindfulness, to establish mindfulness. This text has, it's basically structured as four different teachings, and call them foundations or ways to establish mindfulness. And they are areas that cover the full range of our human experience. And so this is an important piece of this teaching, that when the Buddha is encouraging us to practice mindfulness and establish mindfulness, he's wanting us to explore the entire range of our human experience, all of it. And yet, again, from a particular perspective, in a particular way, not just being angry, but being aware that we're angry, and what's that experience like? Being aware, not just acting out of our emotions or reactions, but being aware of them. And so these four different areas of experience that we can bring our mindfulness to: the body, our physical experience, feelings. In this case, feeling has a very kind of narrow meaning. It's not all of our emotions, but kind of this very narrow but very important aspect of our experience as to whether something is pleasant, unpleasant, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant. So that's the second area. And the third area is a whole host of mind states. And this includes what we would typically call emotions. So the way that the Buddha kind of broke down human experience is a little different than the way we break it down. And so this mind state includes, you know, what we would typically call emotions, but also other things that we might not so much call emotions, like concentration is a mind state, and mindfulness is a mind state. Tranquility is a mind state. Calm and peace are mind states. Those are closer to what we might call emotions. And so that's this third area, is looking at states of mind. These tend to be broad. They're kind of the flavor or coloring of the mind in a broad way. And then the third is attending to experience. I could say intending to experience through some of the frameworks or perspectives that the Buddha found important for freeing the mind from these reactive patterns, freeing the mind from greed and aversion and confusion. So I'll just speak a little bit about each of these. But actually, first I'll say a little bit of something more generally about this teaching of establishing mindfulness. So it can be understood in different ways. So we could look at the instruction to establish mindfulness with respect to the body as an instruction to direct the attention to the body, to attend to the breath, for example, to pay attention to sensations of within the body. And so that's one way that that might be understood, is with each of these areas, we could attend to what's happening in the mind. We could attend to our feeling, the feeling tone. We could kind of choose to direct the attention to a particular area of experience. And this is one kind of class of meditation practices. So this evening, at the beginning of the class, I was encouraging orienting to the hearing. And that's letting the attention be directed, letting the attention kind of land in that field and taking in the experience of hearing. And then we explored a little bit with the breath. And so that, again, is directing the attention. So one thing that's important to, at least for me, it was really important to begin to understand. A lot of the meditation instructions that we may learn early on have this quality of directing the attention. We pick something to pay attention to. Might be the breath. That's a very common place to begin meditation instruction, to pay attention to the breath. And so we might begin to have the idea that in order to be mindful, I have to be picking what I'm paying attention to. And I certainly had that perspective early on. I thought that what mindfulness meant was that I chose what I wanted to pay attention to and I stayed with it. That is one, that I would call that a mindfulness practice. That's a meditation technique that supports the kind of cultivation of the quality of mindfulness through using the function of attention in the mind. Attention in the factor of attention in the mind is a different factor than mindfulness. And so this is something that I find useful to kind of highlight or point to. And we know this, actually, because we may notice at times that we have, you know, been driving or walking down the street, lost in thought, completely lost in thought. And yet we are walking down the street and we are managing to navigate other people. We're managing to not like just veer into the street and get hit by a car. Something is paying attention. And yet we're not mindful. You know, we are lost in thought. So this sense of being present and aware of what's happening in the present moment while it's happening is not happening. And yet this function of attention is going on. The mind is aware, is conscious. The perception is happening. We are noticing objects. The mind is doing all of this without our having to be aware while it's happening. So attention is happening without the mindfulness. So we can see that attention and mindfulness are not exactly the same. And yet we still might think that when we are mindful, it would be that we had some control over attention. And yet, really helpful to notice that attention is a function that has, it's got a dual capacity to it in a way. It's amenable to our conscious control. It's kind of like the breath in this way. You know, we can choose to breathe. We can hold our breath, and then we can consciously breathe in and consciously breathe out through an act of conscious choice. And likewise, the attention, we can consciously choose to direct. We can choose to look at a particular spot on the wall. We can choose to pay attention to, maybe right now, notice the sensation of your feet, the contact of your hands. We can choose to direct the attention. But if we are not choosing to direct the attention will be happening, much as the breath continues to happen as we don't consciously breathe. So this factor of attention goes on whether we are consciously doing it or not. And this points to a kind of a different class of meditation practices, of mindfulness practices, that of settling back and kind of simply, it's kind of like we take ourselves out of the driver's seat of choosing what to pay attention to, and instead kind of just let what the mind is naturally paying attention to kind of come to us. So it's kind of like we're in the passenger seat and the car's moving and we're just moving through the landscape and taking in what's going by. This is also a possible way to engage with mindfulness. We can be aware of what is already here. And just in this moment, you might just notice what's obvious. Maybe it's the sound of my voice. Maybe it's seeing. Maybe it's some body sensations, a sense of sitting here. Maybe it's a mood. We can explore, kind of like that exploration that we did at the beginning of the guided meditation around hearing. In a way, we settled back, and I encouraged you not to try to listen, but just to see what sounds were coming to you. That, in a way, is kind of allowing the attention to just pick up whatever it's naturally picking up in the field of hearing without choosing to listen or aim the attention to any particular sound. So this is a kind of a beginning exploration in that way, in that settling back and just letting the ear do the hearing, that kind of relaxed, receptive quality. And so this is another way, and the kind of whole class of meditation practices that are much more receptive than directive. And so all four of these practices to establish mindfulness can be understood in either way. So the practice around the body could be understood as directing the attention to the body, or simply ways in which we can notice the body, given that that's what attention is already noticing. So these instructions don't have to be taken one way or the other. And so they can be understood to be either very receptive or directed. So the first one of mindfulness of the body is it's actually got quite a few instructions and exercises in it to help us to kind of connect with the experience of the body. It encourages us to notice the experience of breathing, the very first instruction, as one way in. It encourages us to notice our everyday activities, just, you know, the postures of our body, of when we're walking and when we're standing and when we're sitting. So just in a very simple way, we're encouraged to know how our body is disposed. And also a little more in depth in terms of everyday activities. In this section of the sutta, it actually speaks about being mindful while reaching, while extending and bending the arm, while speaking, while being silent, while eating, while walking, while going places, while urinating and defecating are even in there. So this is really encouraging and all day long, kind of just kind of gently knowing what the body is doing in a very general way. And then another practice that is, it's got some different interpretations to it, but one that is an important one for us in our meditation often, is called elements meditation. And this is understood in a couple different ways, but one of the ways it's understood is just kind of as the kind of the elemental qualities of the physical sensations, like when we feel our bodies, when we feel our hands, for example, you know, just let your hands just contact each other and feel your hands. You know, you don't feel hand. That's not an elemental, that's more of a concept. But we feel maybe warmth or moisture, stickiness, pressure, tension, vibration, pulsing, stiffness. Those kinds of sensations are much more basic in terms of touching into our bodily experience. This is an important learning, actually, for many of us. I know that for myself, when I first started meditating, I didn't have much access to this realm of the physical, especially internal physical, the inside the area of the torso. And so this is pointed to in this to help us to begin to kind of get familiar in a way with the what we could call the language of the body. How does the body communicate with us? So in a breath, you know, breathing in. We know we're breathing in. And breathing out, we know we're breathing out. But what are the sensations that tell us that? Oh, maybe the expansion, the movement of the chest. Or maybe a vibratory quality, a kind of a puffy quality in the nose and throat. These sensations are happening that are kind of the body's way of letting us know that there's something going on. The body doesn't speak in terms of hand and shoulder and foot. It speaks in terms of tightness, tension, pulsing, heat, coolness, moisture, dryness, lightness, hardness, softness. And so these kind of qualities we begin to touch into in our mindfulness practice. This is an important, I think in some ways the fact that the mindfulness of the body is the first of these four, it begins to point us to kind of beginning to recognize this difference between body experience and mind. Our mind is what's responsible for getting all caught up in reactivity, in greed and aversion and confusion. And yet there's so many different ways in which we kind of conflate or mix up the body and mind without even knowing it. Like sometimes I'll ask people, so what's the strongest sensation you're feeling right now? And they'll say something like, well, my hand is the strongest sensation. Well, that's not a sensation, it's a concept. What they're experiencing is some sensation in the hand, maybe a tension or a tightness. And so this begins to help us to tease apart this awareness of these elemental qualities of the physical, begins to help us to tease apart body and mind. And also, we may tend to confuse or conflate the tension and tightness and aching and burning with the quality of the unpleasantness of them. And those two are also they're different pieces. And so we can begin to get familiar with the body, and that starts to help us learn about the difference between the physical experience and whether something is pleasant or unpleasant, and then how we might tend to react to that pleasant or unpleasant with greed or aversion. And how then something like aversion or dislike of a physical experience then can create kind of a stronger tension or tightness around it. We can see this happen in our experience. And we might begin to see that as the aversion gets weaker, that the physical experience is no longer quite so challenging. And so, this kind of exploration helps us to recognize how much of our difficulty is not so much because of what's happening in the body, but because of our mind's reaction to it. And so this is a little bit about the body, a little bit about mindfulness of the body, and it's a big exploration. And the second area of feeling, it can be very also intimately connected with the body, the feeling tone of experience, whether pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, because all of our physical experience has a quality of being pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Whether we're, if we're cut by a knife or we fall down and bruise our knee, there's some unpleasant experience. When we taste something that we enjoy, like chocolate or a delicious meal, the pleasantness in there we experience. And so every experience, physical experience, has a feeling tone to it. It's pleasant, it's unpleasant, or it's neutral. It's neither pleasant nor unpleasant. The Buddha points to this as an important piece of exploration, partly because this quality of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral is a big area where the reactivity comes. It springs from this place. We don't actually react so much to what's going on out there, or even necessarily to physical sensation of burning or pulsing or stabbing. We tend to react to the unpleasantness or the pleasantness of it. And so the Buddha pointed us to kind of highlight this area. He said it's an important area to begin to recognize, because as we begin to recognize the pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral quality, and the neutral part we often just space out about, that can be a whole place where we just tend to go off into getting lost in thought, because our mind kind of gets bored with the neutral. And so we just space out. And so as we begin to recognize the pleasant, the unpleasant, and the neutral, it helps our minds to be present more and to not necessarily follow on in the habitual reaction towards greed, towards aversion, or towards the spacing out. So this is an important piece of the process of seeing, important piece of seeing how the process of our reactivity comes into play. Because whenever we're experiencing reactive emotion, there's some kind of feeling tone that's at play in the mix that we usually haven't quite clearly seen. So this is a pointing to that it's helpful to notice that. And then the mind states, the being mindful of mind states. Now this is beginning to see how it's kind of got this kind of bidirectional thing going on in this area of the instructions. It says we should notice when we're experiencing greed, aversion, and delusion, so those kind of foundational reaction pieces, all of our reactive emotions will contain some mixture of greed, aversion, and delusion. Anger has a fair amount of aversion to it, mixed in maybe with some confusion and a little bit of wanting things to be a particular way, not wanting them to be a particular way. So our emotions are kind of mixtures of this greed and aversion and delusion. But the Buddha points down to this kind of really simple part. And for myself, I find it helpful to just kind of what's the most obvious one going on? when there's some kind of reaction going on, it's like, well, what's the biggest flavor? Does it feel like a, ugh, or a, ooh, like that? Or does it feel like a, ugh, just kind of la, la, la? Just so not really connecting. So we're encouraged to notice when greed, aversion, and delusion are present, but we're also encouraged to notice when they are absent in this one. And this is also really important, because the when greed, aversion, delusion are absent, then we start to touch into a whole different kind of terrain of emotion, wholesome emotions like love and peace and tranquility and delight and joy and ease and balance of mind. So there's a whole host of wholesome, beautiful mind states that this practice of looking into our minds begins to reveal to us, begins to point out. And so we're encouraged to notice these kind of different sides in our experience. And again, for me, this particular practice, actually I find this one in particular is really useful in this receptive quality. So what's going on in the world? You know, what's going on in our lives right now? And how am I with that? What is the mind's relationship to that? How is the mind in relationship to something that's happening right now? Oh, it's frustrated. Okay, well, that's kind of an aversive quality. Or it really wants something to happen. Well, that's the greedy quality. So that we can kind of orient towards, oh, what is happening in the mind? But it's not like trying to figure it out. It's more like, what's here already? What is this? What is going on in the mind already in this very general way? So this is the kind of fast tour through these four foundations of mindfulness. So these first three I think of as really being kind of the bare aspects of our experience in a way, an orientation to begin to establish and get familiar with what it means to actually be present. We start to get familiar with being present with our body, with the feelings, and with our mind states. And then when there's a kind of a sense of that capacity, when we have a little bit more capacity for being mindful, then the Buddha encourages us in this fourth foundation to start looking at experience in terms of some of his teachings. And again, it's not about trying to overlay so much. Well, it's not so much trying to do this, perhaps, to apply these teachings to our experience, but we begin to get familiar with like different orientations. So what's important? The teachings in this fourth foundation are like, these are important areas to attend to. And one of the areas he says is important to attend to is when hindrances are arising. I'm just going to name two of them right now. There's five practices in this fourth foundation, but just two of them right now. And actually, one scholar says that in terms of the comparative literature of this teaching, you know, we have multiple different versions of this teaching from different traditions, different Buddhist traditions. And in terms of the comparative literature, these two that I'm going to name are the ones that are in all of the comparative literature. And so they're kind of the highlights of this particular teaching in a way. And they are to recognize when there are qualities that are hindering our ability to be in the present moment. So looking at when sense desire, ill will, sleepiness, restlessness, and doubt are present in the mind. So those five: sense desire, ill will, sleepiness, restlessness, and doubt. When those are present, we're curious about when they're present and when they're not present. But the Buddha is pointing to these as being important qualities of mind to know they're there. Now, an important piece about this teaching that I'm surprised it took me this long to remember to tell you this, is that in the instructions in this particular sutta, the Buddha's encouragement is just to notice what's happening. So, for instance, when he says, notice that greed or aversion is present in the mind, the instruction goes something like, when aversion is present in the mind, one understands aversion is present in the mind. And likewise with these hindrances, when sleepiness is present in the mind, one understands sleepiness is present in the mind. And so this is pointing to actually the possibility that we can be mindful of something like sleepiness. It's harder. It's not our habitual thing to do when we're sleepy, to be aware of it, but it is possible. And so this is the instruction. When something is arising, know that it's arising. The instructions don't say, when aversion is arising in the mind, beat yourself up about it, tell yourself you're a bad person, and try to get rid of it. It doesn't even say, when aversion is arising in the mind, apply the antidote of metta to it. It just says, know that it's happening. And so this is the kind of pure practice of mindfulness, to be aware of what's happening in the present moment while it's happening. And this is that pointing to the power of that. And there are times when we try to do that, try to recognize, oh yes, aversion's arising in the mind. And the aversion or the reactivity is way stronger than our ability to be mindful of it. And in that case, we do need to bring in some of the other practices, bring in some metta, or redirect the attention to something that's a little easier to be present with. But this sutta is describing how do we establish mindfulness, and it talks about it in a very pure way. When sleepiness is arising in the mind, we know sleepiness is arising in the mind. When sleepiness is not arising in the mind, we're aware of that. We are aware of alertness. And so this is one of the encouragements to look at our experience through this lens of the hindrances, the presence or absence of the hindrances. One of the other lenses is the presence or absence of factors that lead to awakening, lead to the mind becoming more and more free. And so these are qualities like mindfulness, investigation, energy, joy, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. So these qualities, we are also encouraged to notice when concentration is present. We know that concentration is present. When mindfulness is present, we know that mindfulness is present. When concentration is absent, we know that concentration is absent. When interest, investigation, curiosity is present, we know that it's present. The recognition of wholesome qualities of mind, of these beautiful qualities of mind that support our practice. This points to another kind of interesting feature of mindfulness, that when we turn our attention to something like the hindrances, knowing they're present, noticing, oh, this is okay, so ill will is arising in the mind. I know that's happening. What happens as we do that with mindfulness is it creates the conditions for that pattern to get weaker. So the purity of just knowing ill will is arising in the mind, as ill will arising in the mind, creates the conditions for it to arise less and less and less and less as we continue that exploration. On the opposite side, as we explore these beautiful qualities, joy, as we explore joy and happiness and concentration, as we are aware of those happening in the mind, it creates the conditions for those to get stronger, to strengthen in our experience. And so this is a pointing to what supports us. The mindfulness, actually, when we can cultivate this quality of right mindfulness, it simultaneously will support the weakening of those reactive states of mind and the strengthening of these beautiful states of mind. are these qualities of love and compassion and kindness and joy and peace and balance. And so these are some of the benefits of this teaching that the Buddha offered. And it's time to stop. Thank you for your attention. And if any of you have questions, I'm happy to, you know, just be here for a little while and just... So you're welcome to come up and just chat.